on what you want, stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you are depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you are dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
And if you're looking for Dr. Unger, he's actually in the studio. So you're listening to the Talk Therapy Show, 93.3.
Welcome to the Talk Therapy Show on CFRIU 93.3 for Wednesday, August 8th. We are broadcasting to you live and commercial free from the University of Guelph and serving listeners in the Guelph and Wellington County. A very special good evening to our online listeners and to any new Talk Therapy Show listeners. We welcome you. We hope after this much-needed long weekend, you're all well-rested and ready for the rest of the week. This evening on the Talk Therapy Show, it's truly an honor to have this very, very special guest in the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, it brings me a great pleasure to introduce you one of Canada's leading voices of mental health care, Dr. Tom Unger.
Dr. Tom Unger is an award-winning educator and one of Canada's leading voices of mental health care. He's a clinician and is Chief of Psychiatry and Medical Director Mental Health Program at North York General Hospital and Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Toronto. Trained at the University of Toronto in both psychiatry and family medicine, he has clinical experience as both a community family physician and a psychiatrist. His academic training includes 2 years of fellowship and subspecialty certification in psychosomatic medicine, a master's degree in education, and a senior fellow of the Educating Futures Physicians for Ontario Project. He has several awards for innovative design and delivery of national continuing education programs, including the Mood Disorder Management Workshop on Depression, ACCESS, a national program on psychosis management, and Reality GP, a national program on depression and anxiety disorders. What a mouthful.
I'm telling you. No, Jamila, you know, really and truly, it's a mouthful. I mean, I met Dr. Unger, we had lunch, and let me tell you, I was extremely, extremely impressed with this man, because it's not just about mental health, it's his passion and his wanting to teach people so that they can learn how to take, you know, their own mental health into their own hands.
And I'm glad he's here tonight, because I actually brought my own, I guess, psychiatry chair. I do need some help after being
let me just tell you this. You've been listening to the assaults that I've been getting every Wednesday night from Jamila. I have an anxiety disorder, and I'm hoping that Dr. Unger, you know, could really, really help this, because really and truly,
do you see the look Dr. Unger is giving you right now?
I'm tired.
It's a pity look.
It's a pity look.
He knows the truth. I know the truth. We all know the truth.
But I'm going to get you some therapy, because you know what?
Good.
I am sick and tired of
Any free therapy is good therapy.
Absolutely.
So
ladies and gentlemen, before we bring you this exclusive interview with Dr. Unger, we are going to introduce you to our regularly scheduled music therapy segment. Music chosen to cajole you. Music chosen to make you think. To move you.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, you know, we have a delightful selection.
Our
selection this evening. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start it off. So, when we return, we will be definitely having our interview with Dr. Unger.
Yes.
All afternoon doing every little chore, the thought of you You. you're telling me when you don't believe a word I'm saying. We can't go on together with suspicious minds. We can't build our dreams on suspicious minds. So if an old friend I know stop by to say hello,
to the Talk Therapy Show, 93.3 CFRU. The time is now 8:14 to be exact, and it's very, very beautiful outside. But if you want to know the temperature, it is 24 degrees, and we're looking at a high of 26 tomorrow with a chance of showers. So just so you guys compare yourself with your umbrellas. You know me, I'm the weather girl.
Yep. Well, we're back, so now music therapy.
Yes, music therapy. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And our first musical therapy track was Losing My Mind from Liza Minnelli.
Liza Minnelli.
Sorry, Liza. That's not my
You don't listen to Liza Minnelli.
That's not my my era, Mom. That's okay. Like Stone Age.
Liza.
Time. Sorry. Liza. Sorry, Liza.
Liza.
Next up, we had Go Insane by Lindsey Buckingham.
And I feel like I'm going insane every Wednesday night working with Jamila. But
oh, really?
Hey, Dr. Anga is here to save me tonight, thankfully.
Imagine if I wasn't here next week. Imagine what would happen.
Yeah.
You'd cry.
Okay, moving
and
on.
And last but not least, we had Suspicious Minds.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're now about to introduce Dr. Anga. So, just give us a second or so. So, we're going to switch some mics. Dr. Unger, welcome to the Talk Therapy Show. Do we have you on?
You do. Thank you so much, Samartha.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Unger, you know, I have to give you props for, you know, coming back. Actually, yesterday was your first day back from vacation, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And then you had to go back and give those all your patients who've been waiting for you some love, and then to come to do the show. So bravo for making it on time.
Thank you so much. And about 3-hour jet lag to add to that. So
We have to add that in. Well, so can we give you a bit of a psychotherapy? I mean, do you need us to psychoanalyze you tonight to make sure that you're okay and fit for this?
If you feel like it, I'd enjoy it.
So. Ouch, he'd enjoy it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we thought, you know, we'd put Dr. Unger up to the test. You know, as to what makes, you know, a good psychiatrist?
A good rates, Mom. Good rates.
Good rates. Well, okay, Jay, let's start off. Let's just make sure that we have the right guy here. This is Dr. Unger, the man I met who I thought was just passionate about, you know, his mental health minute, a project he's involved with, going very well.
Thank you.
And
thank
so, you know, I'm honestly, I was on the site and I couldn't believe the practical information. But we're going to talk about that later. But we want to assess you.
Okay.
See if you're up to par.
On radio. Here we go.
We know your qualifications.
And you're being
taped
right
now. We want to know if your behavior and your attitude is in sync. Okay, so the first thing, when you're looking for a psychiatrist, a good psychiatrist is never judgmental. What do you say, Jay?
I agree.
So, Dr. Unger.
I would agree with that, but they're going to talk straight to you anyways.
Okay.
They might tell you what they think, but they shouldn't be judgmental or passing judgment on, because how you live your life and what's important to you is your business. But they're going to be honest and straight, or they're not doing a good job.
So it's not a thing for yours that if I come to you that you're going to judge me. You're just going to be, sort of focus on why I'm here to see you and not the fact of whether I'm good or bad or whether I'm...
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, when people train, because psychiatrists start out in medical school. They're medical doctors first, and then they specialize. You have to learn to do whatever, you know, appropriate within the person's needs. And if it doesn't agree with your background, your beliefs, that's a problem. And people don't get through their training because they're there to help people. They're not there for their own personal life. So
absolutely.
Judgment is not part of the treatment.
He's doing well, Jay.
So far, so good.
He's doing good. He's doing good. He's, he or she is someone who listens. So we're talking deep listening, Dr. Unger. Not the type where you're waiting to throw a theory at them or just
so
deep
that
listening.
Ties into being judgmental. Like you're listening before you judge. So that's
okay. So let me hear this.
Absolutely. In fact, there's all kinds of types of talk therapy, and a fellow named Carl Rogers said that one of the most important things is that you're listening and you're empathic, because that alone has a curative value when you feel heard. And that experience itself is helpful. So, yeah, if you can't listen, I like to talk, and I'll get, when I'm nervous, I talk quicker, so you'll hear me get, or when I get excited, you'll hear me pick up speed, but definitely you've got to be able to listen.
Well, we hope you're going to be speaking up a lot of speed. We hope to have you just excited, not nervous in the studio this evening. Okay, so you're doing great. He's knowledgeable, so there's no question about that, because we read you his entire dossier, so we're not concerned about whether or not he's knowledgeable. We've figured that out.
I like the third one.
Okay, he's open to many kinds of treatments and therapies. So a lot of times you find psychiatrists, they don't want to give patients alternatives. They want the control, they want to prescribe the medications, and that's unfair, you know, to the patient. So, what do you say about that?
I'm right with you on that one. You really should be where the person is and what their needs are, and giving them options. I really enjoy when people are empowered, when they have information, they have options, and I love when they choose. I don't want to be choosing for them. I have enough things to take care of in my own life, let alone making options for somebody else. So you should be open to many treatments. You should lay out the options for somebody. I like to direct them to good knowledge sources, credible ones. Nowadays, the internet, give them patient pamphlet information, and I help them make choices. But, you know, it's a funny thing, though, is there are a few people, sometimes it's called old school, but they don't want to choose. They want you to choose for them, even though I don't like to do that. So while I like them to choose, ideally, or we choose together with my input and my recommendation, a few people actually say, Doc, you just tell me what I should do, what you think is best. And sometimes you have to do that, even though that's not in keeping with my personal flavor. So again, I can't even judge that. If that's what they want, sometimes that actually is something you bring out. But absolutely, I do not like to be prescriptive. That's sort of a little more old school.
Right.
And, you know, the democratization of information and choices, as we call it, for consumers is, you know, it's everywhere in society. The internet's everywhere. And that's where everything's at right now.
Well, you're going good. You're going good. We're just making sure that, because like I said, when I met you, I never thought I'd have a psychiatrist on the show, because I always talk about, you know, medication and labeling. And when I met you, you were totally outside the mold.
Okay.
You know, you had spunk, you had looks, you've got the works, Dr. Unger. Are you sure you're...
But this is radio, you see, they can't see, so...
Well, I'm explaining it to them.
They know the girls at the Talk Therapy Show have good taste.
Yeah, we've got good taste, and if you don't have the looks and don't have the charm,
sorry.
Hey, we don't allow you to come in.
Well, thank you, it was worth the drive, definitely.
worth the drive to Guelph, not Acton, but Guelph. Right, and the last thing we want to know, he genuinely cares about his patients, right? And we're talking about, you know, taking time to interact with them. Sometimes they may call you at a time that
you may not be available, or they might be, you know, breaking down. Do you have situations like that when that occurs?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think genuinely caring, that comes out. You can't fake that. You can fake it for a little while, but not for long. And it comes through anyway. So, I used the reference to Carl Rogers, the unconditional positive regard for the person.
Right.
And it's funny because sometimes you meet someone and you get right away a feeling, and it's coming both ways, whether you want to work with them, you think you can do a good job
for them,
and they bring it back to you. And as to when you're available, that's another issue because, you know, you have to be able to set limits. The same way you help work with people to teach them to set boundaries and limits, I have to set limits on my
own
time. So we have a pool of people, about 25 of us, and we take turns on call at the hospital. So we do our 24 hours availability once every 25 days. That way I'm not going to get called after hours, or one of my colleagues is going to take care of that for me, and I do the same for them. So we have all kinds of mechanisms for that.
Well, you guys are running an amazing program at North York General.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, it seems that way. It seems that everybody's working, you know, for the benefit of the client, and it seems that you guys are working with the community and different, you know, therapies, not just going after the medication or the labeling. And so I certainly appreciate, you know.
Great. Yeah, it's a community hospital, community teaching hospital, and I love working there, and I chose to go there. I could have gone all kinds of places, and I love that ability to work within a community and feel connected to that community, wherever that might be.
Well, you know, then you have the upper hand, because one of the things that's amazing about you is that not only are you trained in psychiatry, you are a GP as well.
That's right. That was my first career. Yeah.
Huh.
I trained as a family doctor. It was a 2-year training, and then I worked for 2 years in an office, in a couple of offices downtown Toronto, actually. One was around Wellesley and Yonge Street, and the other one was sort of at Bathurst and Bloor in downtown Toronto. Very urban practice, a mixture of all kinds of problems coming in. And I did a couple of days a week in an addiction center where I worked, called the Donwood Institute. And so we saw a large variety of mental health issues, as well as every other general medical problem coming in, taking care of babies, pregnant women, all the normal bread and butter family medicine stuff. I loved it. But I just got a little bit bored, and I really enjoyed the mental health stuff and thought it was time to go back to school.
Yeah, but that is certainly amazing, you know, because I thought, how is this training in these two fitted disciplines? Because I think, you know, when you're a GP, you understand a lot more of the problems on a level as compared to when you do see the psychiatrist. You know, a lot has transpired. So having been trained as a GP and as a psychiatrist, how do you think that gives you the edge in treating your patients?
I think the edge is that you see people come in with physical problems, and a lot of people in society or in their cultures don't talk about emotional problems. It's not allowed. There's a stigma. They're embarrassed. So they come in, and it's the physical problems they're having with it, the heart racing, the stomach upset, the nerves, the muscle tension. And you start doing all the medical tests, and you realize it's not about that. I mean, you have to do them, but then you find out what else is going on here.
That's right.
The other thing, as a family doctor, you get to know the whole family, the children, the grandparents, the siblings sometimes, especially if you're in a smaller community. So you really get to see how everything interacts in the community and what's going on in the family and how that all those relationships start to build.
Yeah.
I think that's the edge. You're really connected to a community. It's not sort of isolated one-on-one in an office.
Absolutely, because, you know, bedside manner is a big thing, you know, and I think now they're sending people back to med school for an extra year to have that. So I'm thinking in psychiatry, having, the fact that you are a GP, I think that's having the edge. That's absolutely having the edge.
Yeah, it makes me different than my other psychiatrist colleagues, though, for the most part.
How different? Tell us how different, because I'm sure meeting you, I said, Dr. Unger, you honestly, you do not fit the mold.
Well,
and it's about your I think your passion and your disposition.
I don't know if it's because of that, but you get to see how, you know, when the rubber hits the road is the term some people use. When you see people and they're getting their care, or they're coming in with their problems and their physical problems. Having worked in a family medicine office, you get to see how mental health, what works, what doesn't, what they're going to accept. Much more practical and a little bit more of a community sense. So I think that's how I kind of think of things. So when some of my colleagues get super technical within their specialty field, which I like to do too,
right,
and I'm good at, and I quite enjoy that, in that arena, you realize it doesn't translate when you get out into the regular world.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know what my number 7 sprocket wrench is supposed to do to my furnace. Because that's too technical for
me.
I just need to know how to maybe turn the thermostat up. So it's the same idea, just getting some general things that make sense that people will accept. And that's, I think that helped me do that.
Good stuff, because when you look at it, it could be you can call it an exclusionary practice, when these guys are always talking shop And then, you know, they're not talking that the normal person or the lay person as myself can understand, right?
Absolutely.
So it's kind of, I find it exclusionary when you have these big languages. And I think that's what has turned people off a lot about mental health. You know, these big terms and how did it relate to me? It's not everyday language for an everyday person suffering with mental illness.
That's right. And it's not really all that complicated either.
Absolutely. And that's why we are going to talk about the mental Health Minute Project.
Okay.
That's kind of why you're here, because, you know, psychiatry is taking a turn, you know. It's no longer, I think, like I said before, where people are feeling, you know, it's not exclusionary. And people, I think psychiatrists are realizing that they have to come out of the office to find these patients. They have to maybe teach and not just be speaking at people. So why don't you tell us a little about Mental Health Minute?
Okay, so it was about 4 years ago. I'm driving in my car. The SARS epidemic's going on. I can't work in my office. I have a mask on my face because anyone who's been in the hospital has to be quarantined for 10 days, even though most of us were quite well. So I'm driving home in the car. I got the mask. I'm listening to the radio.
The mask. Hold up, ladies and gentlemen. You had the mask and you were driving on the highway?
Well, no. The mask was just down by an
end. Well, that'd be a scary man with a mask driving. Okay.
The truck drivers gave me a look, so I'll tell you.
I tell you.
So, and I'm turning on the radio and I hear the Weather Minute, as your daughter said. She, you know, she's the weather girl. So you hear the Weather Minute on one station, you turn to the other channel and you get the Market Minute for the Stock Market Minute. And so I'm thinking, why don't we have a Mental Health Minute?
Brilliant.
Nice little 1 minute information message on mental health, connected to everyday things. And for quite a while, as some of my patients, if you ever talk to them, I tell you, when I hear something really that I clicks, a good metaphor, a good analogy,
right,
I take a little Post-it yellow sticky note and I write a little something to myself and I stick it on my desk. And my desk is kind of yellow covered because I get a little idea that becomes a mental health minute later. Just a little observation, a little joke, a little something. And so I turned those into little 1 minute information messages
that I recorded.
Nice. And that became the idea then to start up a website called the Mental Health Minute. Not so much when you know you have a problem and that you want to, if you know you have an illness or condition like medical depression, you type it in a Google search, you get all information. But let's say you're just not feeling good or you're not asleep, you don't know what it is. To try to get at people before they know they have a problem in everyday language and the way it intersects with everyday life. So started up the Mental Health Minute, built a website, mentalhealthminute.com, and the project's gone from there. And eventually I had some assistance. I got the help of Annette Posey, a project manager, a wonderful person who I hired part-time to help me work on the project, and we applied for a grant. We put out a call to some community consumer group agencies, and we ended up working with three other groups, the National Network for Mental Health, our lead agency on a grant, which we got, the Mood Disorder Association of Ontario, and the Ontario Association of Patient Councils, which is also led by our local North York General Hospital patient council representative, Teresa Claxton. And we applied for a grant and were successful in a very nice grant from the Canadian Council on Learning.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave us a little bit of funding to get up and running and develop some more information. We've done some podcasts. We've done some minutes. We've done a few video minutes, which are kind of fun, which are on YouTube on our mentalhealthminute.com website. So it's part of a project that we call Improving Mental Health Services, a bottom-up approach to improving provider behavior.
Yeah, that was like when you talk about, and that's one of the things here that I noticed that you have taken many approaches. As far as I'm concerned, there are three important approaches towards providing visitors to the website with good, credible information. One approach is the bottoms-up approach, the other an infotainment approach, and the third an evidence-based approach. So school us, doctor, as to why on each of this. Let's first start off with the bottoms-up approach.
Okay,
why you took the bottoms-up approach?
I thought there was a huge gap. There's lots of top-down stuff. You go to a good university, you go to any good bookstore, you look up a topic, you can get lots of information top-down once you know what's going on with you. But there wasn't much in terms of how does that translate and kind of information translate and knowledge translate into your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
Depression doesn't mean anything to me, but being really down in the dumps on a Monday morning means something to me. So the idea was to bring the information in a bottom-up approach to those everyday things in life that we all experience and start there and bring them up so they can kind of meet in the middle between the good information coming down and the things that you feel in your life, the things that you experience that we all do in our normal life, to see if maybe there's something going on you need to know more about.
So when you, in comparison with a top, I think, is there a top approach? Well, because a bottoms-up approach, I think it's starting from the grassroots, would you say?
That's absolutely
finding out the source of the problem instead of, you know, the problem is here and you're trying to fix it. Would you say?
It's giving you information at a grassroots level to try to figure out what might be going on, starting with what you might be experiencing, not with the label or a name.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring that experience up, and then you figure out for yourself with some good information if there's anything more to it. And then where do you go to get some good credible information some
right.
good links, some
That's
good
right.
other information? What
That's
is
right.
it? Because it's tough to get the best information. There's some good stuff out there, but you know, you're not an expert at navigating that, so we try to help you with that.
Oh, you guys have done an amazing job. Ladies and gentlemen, if you know, you really, I would really like you. I mean, here we are, the Talk Therapy Show, every Wednesday night. We give you an awareness, and we're making you aware of this website, www.mentalhealthminute.com. There is so much on there. It's just a world of... what do you call it?
It's a growing
It's
world.
A multimedia.
It's needed.
A shop, resource. We're talking, but first, we didn't answer that. We spoke about the bottoms-up approach. You called it an infotainment because no, we're talking psychiatry. It's not supposed to be fun in psychiatry. So how did you bring that? Because we're loving this. We're loving this. We want mental health to be about fun and not about stigma and not about making people feel ashamed.
Right on, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I just like to have fun, and I like to present things in a fun way. And the more I get going, the more that'll start to come out. So,
ouch! There's a tiger in him.
it's kind of fun. It's also a way for me to be creative in my work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many things you can do within your
Absolutely.
Office with your person. So
good stuff.
It's a lot of fun to be able to do some silly video minutes and some silly audio minutes with a background of something important, but kind of make it a light, fun way. And so that's why a lot of the little yellow stickies that I write to myself, no one else sees them until I turn them, because I might get in trouble for what I write down.
I could imagine. But I'm laughing at you when you're saying there's so much you can do in your office. I could just see you there talking to the couch, rolling over the couch, just going nuts and having fun. And then people are thinking Dr. Unger is in there very, very busy, and yes, he's just having fun.
And there's a lot of laughing that goes on as well as a lot,
Good
of,
stuff.
A lot of crying in the
Absolutely.
Office, right?
But you know, laughter therapy is huge on the heart, so that's a big thing. But the fact you guys are taking an infotainment, I think it's so amazing because, you know, you're entertained. You know, you're not feeling that, you know, it doesn't make you feel bad. My experience on the site, I really enjoyed it. I specifically love you and I think Nurse Fern, who's also a part of the, I don't know, your project. She works with you at
yeah, she's one of the mental health nurses I work with, Fern Quint, and she volunteered to come do two or three podcasts with
me. Oh, she listened to them.
She's doing some speaking. She does some great work. She has some special interest in Asperger's. And so I got her on there and sitting at my computer at my desk. We pulled out the mic and we did a few quick podcasts. And we had some fun. We have to control her too. She can get out of hand.
Yeah, she looked like she was on a roll because you guys had done something about, you know, self-reflection. And I really enjoyed that because a lot of people don't self-reflect in order for them to make a better life for themselves. Because you have to, when you go through your good times and your bad times, you have to make that time to self-reflect. You know what things can help me go forward, or what things do I need to ditch? So I can become a better person.
That's right. She's quite strong on that. I mean, I won't get into her personal story, but she has a family. She has some family members, and she's had to become quite skilled at dealing with how to help somebody with some difficulties in her family. And she's translated that into kind help for others and some great tips and skills.
Good stuff.
And some, you know, how to maintain mental wellness. And
Good
that's
stuff.
One of the podcasts we have on there.
Yeah.
So it's not just about illness, it's about health and wellness and how to try to maintain good, healthy habits for
them. Yeah, you guys have one on anger, I think.
That's right. Not Unger. Anger. That's right.
Anger.
Right.
No, this is our Dr. Unger trying to be funny here. No, I'm sorry.
There's no
psychiatrist in Guelph who's supposed to be funny. We're not allowing you to laugh on this show, so you just better take it easy.
That's right.
Better take it easy. Yeah. And so is there anything you want to ask Dr. Unger? As a young lady yourself, other than before we go on,
how do you deal with moms, Dr. Unger?
Oh, my goodness.
Is there anything called the mom syndrome?
Wow, families are loaded. Families are loaded with feelings and relationships and history and feelings.
I'm going to just stop you right then. Don't entertain Jamila. As a matter of fact, when you were leaving
I actually have a question. It's an actual question.
Okay.
Doing what I do, working with children, at times you witness a lot of pain and suffering and you know, a combination of both mental and health issues, and it's overwhelming. So I don't know how to, you know, they say, you know, leave work at work and your home life at home life, but sometimes I do bring my work life home and I'm feeling, you know, that pain of what I've seen. So how do you deal with that? Like, do you just, you know, once you leave work and you take off that uniform, it's done with? Or
done with?
Yeah.
Mom says done with.
I mean, there are days it gets to all of us, and it's difficult work to do at times, but I think people who do it, yourself I'm sure included, You know you're doing the best you can. You know you're doing good work, and you're giving of yourself. But then at the same time, you have a boundary where it's not you. So you help, you do what you can, and then your life begins. And you try not to blend the two of them. And I must say, at times when things get extremely difficult, we focus down and we get almost a bit less feeling. And I think that's just a survival mechanism. You know, a surgeon does that when they start cutting you open because they can't really think about what they're doing or they wouldn't be able to do it. So I think emotionally, we maintain a boundary. And when things get super heavy, we might even protect ourselves a bit. And I think that's the only way to get through the work.
That's the only way. But okay, well, that's good. Okay. As a matter of fact, like I was asking you, you came from vacation and I wanted to know, we want to know, the listeners and us gals here on the Talk Therapy Show, how does a psychiatrist relax while on vacation? Give us the 246, Dr. Unger.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. We just got back yesterday. I took about a 10-day trip. I flew with my wife and my three kids, and we flew to Calgary.
Wow.
We rented a car, and we drove across through the Rockies, through BC, and ended up in Vancouver. So it's kind of like one of those National Lampoon family.
Ouch. I'd love to see the psychiatrist in action.
Not as crazy.
kids in the back, eating the ice cream and the fast food when we had to, and trying to find a hotel vacancy, and looking at the beautiful Rocky Mountains as we drove along. So it was a lot of fun. Hopefully a memorable time, and at times quite trying, like any family vacation can be. And I think you'd find it pretty normal if you drove past me in the car and saw me, depending on the moment, either smiling or agitated, depending on what was going on in the car at that time.
Well, if you had a sign on there that said, I am a psychiatrist, and you were doing a bunch of stuff in there, I'd be very concerned if there was that sign. You know, they said, just married?
Oh, yeah.
I'm a psychiatrist. Yeah, I'd be very concerned, you know. And so basically what we're saying here tonight, you know, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Unger has come in here to tell us a little about this initiative that they're taking. And if you wanted to talk to us, because the project is titled Improving Mental Health Services Through Informed Choice.
That's right.
Why such a name?
Well, the whole point is, I would love it if people could figure out for themselves what they want. The more they know, the better they are able to make a choice for themselves when I lay out some options for them. And you know, it's your healthcare, it's your dollar. The information's out there for you. Why shouldn't you get it? So the more you can be informed, the more you can come with information, the better it is for the outcomes of your healthcare, and actually the easier the work is for me. So and I just don't think there are that many great sources out there.
Absolutely, and I agree with that.
Until you know what's going on. Once you know what's going on, you can go direct your search. But before you know what's going on, that's the idea. Like, if I think of certain things, I don't necessarily have any one brand or one name that comes to mind for mental health before I get to knowing what the condition is. So the idea is try to fill that gap. I call it pre-contemplative learning. It's getting there before you know you even contemplate.
And pre-diagnostic, right?
Absolutely.
Before it gets to that point.
Yeah, and that's where the infotainment stuff comes in, because I observe little funny things. I'm sitting on the bus, I see someone do something funny. I think, oh, that just might be a habit, or it could be something else, because I'm a psychiatrist. So the trick is,
you're not getting invited to my parties. That's for
usually
sure.
usually it's just them. But just in case, that's where we'll create a little minute. And then if, you know, 100 people listen to that, but maybe the five who check that it might be more than that, we capture that because they don't even know what it could be. Then they go up the ladder of information, and maybe one or two of them actually has something they could go get checked out for. It could mean something else. And the other 98 of us, it's just the normal scratching our shoulder or whatever we might be doing. So
right. So you did, those guys, one of your funders, I don't know if you mentioned them. I don't know if they are or not.
One of our partners, or the Canadian Council on Learning, who funded the project.
Absolutely. Yep. Are they the funders of the project?
A federal agency on learning. Their knowledge transfer health literacy program.
That's so right. They're catalysts, actually, in educating the public.
Yeah, it was great, because we wouldn't have gotten we were going a bit, but until we got that just boosted up a huge level, got us to go out and get some community partners and our lead agency, National Network for Mental Health. They did great work, and we're able to get to the point we're at now, and we're just still rolling for a little while, and then we're off to look for where we go from there. So
yeah, what I'm loving about this, everything just seems to be fitting, you know, and here you are associating with, like I said, those guys, because they're about learning and they're about teaching, and I think to bring mental health in an arena of now of just, you know what I mean, teaching and learning, I think it's amazing, rather than just throwing it on people and making them feel, you know what I mean, fear to access the information and feel that they have no... Because when somebody's hopeless and helpless, it's really hard for them to just want to... You know what I mean, you have to be very careful the sort of information you present to them, especially when it's complicated.
And that's really interesting, because mental health problems, unlike some problems, sometimes drive people away from care and away from the ability to go get information. Mm-hmm. You know, if my knee hurts or my leg hurts, I might go seek out help for that. But because mental health affects your mind, the way you think, your motivation, your drive, that actually drives you away from care. So it's a double whammy, so to speak, in terms of conditions.
A double whammy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? Let us take a musical break, and I'm going to dedicate this one.
To me, Mom?
No, to Dr. Unger. This is for you,
Dr. Did you see Dr. Unger? This is first hand. You're seeing what's going on. For once, we have a witness in the studio to see what's going on.
I'm watching this interaction here. Quite interesting.
Are you going to diagnose us or assess
us? It's jealousy. She wants to know what it is. She's 19, and she wants, when she gets to my age in her late 30s, that she's going to look as beautiful.
Listen,
and that's what it is.
Listen here, Freud.
It's a really bad
feeling.
That's
not happening.
But anyways, let us take a musical break. And we will... What was the number?
Are you looking for number 10?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Hold on.
That's how you are, Jay.
Is that it?
Ladies and gentlemen, well, we have The Killers, one of my favorite groups.
What?
And,
that's mine.
And you know
mom.
What? Well, take it, Jay. this girl
you
is going to
see how much
kill
you want to be like me, Mom?
Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Talk Therapy Show 93.3 with Dr. Tom Unger in studio this evening.
Put your back.
Welcome back to the Talk Therapy Show, 93.3 CFRU. In case you're just tuning in, shame on you, but we have Dr. Tom Unger in the studios, and we just...
He's reading our minds, yes, and I'm not letting him. I'm just trying to hold firm. He's trying to read my mind.
But he could read your facial expression.
Ouch. He's good. But anyways, welcome back, you know, ladies and gentlemen, to the Talk Therapy Show, 93.3, and we are here with Dr. Unger, who's dropped by to bring some attention to a project called Mental Health Minute. And, you know... I really, really love this initiative because it's, you know, it's so practical. It's a website you go on there and it really makes you feel that you have a really live psychiatrist there with you. You know, it covers everything. So let us talk about, you know, mental health and the cost. You know, we're talking about, I think, $14 billion, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. If you're getting into dollars, I mean, you know, those statistics are funny. You read them and everybody reports huge numbers, $2 billion, and they get bigger. But the fact is, it's probably the number one cause of workplace disability right now. And it's not just the person who's experiencing it that it costs money. It's the family members. It's the people they work with. It's the teams. It's sort of ripple effect, like circles.
Right.
When you throw a pebble in the water, rippling out from that get affected by it. So it's incredible in this day and age that something that's so serious, it costs so much money, gets such little attention compared to physical illnesses.
That's right.
You know, we think we're so advanced and sophisticated, and then just because it affects not, you know, their liver or their knee or their ankle, because it's their mood and their brain, people, they don't give it the attention, and it costs tons of money.
Yeah.
Interestingly, employers are getting more and more interested in it because they're starting to figure out that it's actually costing them on their bottom line, and that's something they pay attention to.
So what are they trying to do to fight that? Are they trying to, in the screening process for applicants, are they more, are they going through a lot of, strict screening? Maybe. That might just be something of the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. That could be. I know insurance companies certainly, that's sometimes eligibility or past health is something they do look at. But the employers are quite interested in that. They're starting to get their employee assistance programs on board so that they're available to people. Starting to push information to them so that they get it, you know, that they get identified earlier on so that people can get well or maintain healthy habits. The whole idea of wellness is being pushed by employers much more nowadays to try to keep them in the workplace and keep the productivity going. And really, work is a very important part of our lives. Hopefully, we enjoy some of our work.
Absolutely.
You know, we feel productive in that, you know, not just the money part of it. So it's a really important thing in people's lives beyond the financial aspect.
Right. So what is I don't know, Health Canada doing about this? Are they trying to, are they listening to people like you who's thinking outside the box and saying, hey, let us stop trying to shove down psychiatry down people's throat and let us educate them? It makes more business sense to, you know, to educate them and to provide resources that are, especially when you are dealing with a mild disorder and not something that's, you know, very serious.
Yeah. Oh, well, the timing's perfect for that question because the federal government, the Senate commission, there was just a huge commission went on by two senators, Keon and Kirby, who put out a paper on Out of the Shadows at Last, they called it, about mental health coming out of the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that, they have a whole public education knowledge translation program they're going to put forward and a destigmatization program. And that's coming, and they're just setting up their committee. So if you go Senate Commission of Canada and Mental Health Commission of Canada, you search that, you'll get information. Maybe some of your listeners want to apply to be on some of the committees because they need input from all kinds of people. So they're finally getting really nicely on board. Provincial governments are starting to pay increasing attention to it. So it's starting to get there, but there's a long way to go.
But you think about a long way to go, but you know what, doctor, we can say we're coming out of the stage of what's it called, the once flew over the cuckoo's nest, what's it called?
Yeah,
we're getting away from that type of perception of mental health, you know, that shock treatment, you know, we're getting away from that, and we're getting, because a lot of people have been frightened.
Yeah.
You know, the medications and the fact that, you know, maybe they'll be stigmatized or be labeled, or a psychiatrist will have a lot of, you know, power over them. What do you say to people like that who have this apprehension to see a psychiatrist because of that reason?
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, before I knew much about it and trained in it myself, I didn't entirely understand it. So it's scary when we don't know something familiar. But again, get good information. That's part of what the mentalhealthminute.com is doing. Educate yourself and, you know, go on a referral from a trusted colleague or trusted friend to start up the ladder of who you might see if you need help. That movie, it was just on last night, I think, as a matter of fact, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, was it
more damage than anything, because it's basically, It's funny. I read a book about how movies and psychiatry kind of go together because a lot of the plots, a lot of the screenwriters love using psychiatry and psychiatrists because it's a really easy way to solve an answer in a narrative if you're writing a script. So when you don't know what goes on, the psychiatrist just comes and explains it all away. And then the scriptwriter doesn't have a problem. And that movie, first of all, you know, the character played by Jack Nicholson wasn't unwell. He was being punished. And we don't punish people, and we're not police people. So all those kind of myths and things.
But don't you think some, I'm not saying, I mean, I'm sure in your time in mental health, you've seen doctors who are not being ethical, who could be a little more, I mean, it's not something you have to say because, I mean, they're your colleagues. But, I mean, sometimes you see people who are being, you know, they're not being ethical to the client, and it's just plain wrong.
That's exceedingly rare, though.
In fact,
it's reportable now if we see it. I see some really good work, and you know, those kind of TV things, you know, the psychiatrists are one of three things in the movies. They're usually the bad guy, they call it Dr. Evil, they're usually the funny guy, or they're the unbelievably good guy, where they'll hug you, they'll take you home, they'll give you dinner, which isn't realistic either. So the movies really crystallize it in a few different fictions. So,
okay, are you a hugger, Dr. Unger?
Not at work, I'm not.
Well, I don't know, they probably think you're going crazy, so I suggest you keep it at the door. Isn't that what you say, leave all the fun at the door?
That's not supposed to be going on in your office, though.
Absolutely. And you know what, there's some key consumer benefits, right, to this website. You know, I found an increased awareness of how mental, you know, health impacts their daily life. Because, I mean, you have that tip of the day, I love it.
Yeah.
You go on there and these tips are like, wow, they're not... You know what I mean? They're not in language that scares you. They're in language. I mean, you know what? I think I'm feeling this, and it makes you look at yourself. No,
it's just about everyday stuff. I mean, I don't differentiate mental health from general health, so that's why it reads like that to you because it's just whatever affects your day. And I know, you know, what kind of day I'm having, how stressed I am, how much coffee I drink. That stuff's as relevant as anything to me in the day. So I don't call that mental health. I just call that general wellness and health stuff. So that's the way we present the information. So hopefully the tips of the day are good. We have some, any link that we recommend are going to be credible because it's important that we get
credible. Absolutely. Go ahead.
One of the problems with mental health information that's out there on the internet is that some of it's being written by people with very severe mental health problems.
Are you serious? No.
Sometimes it's wonderful experienced input by consumers, and sometimes people aren't well. So you got a whole mishmash of people and a lot of political agendas on there. So start with a good site. Make sure it's credible. Check that it's from a good group that you would trust. And so the only ones I've picked off there are some of the better ones, and I'm sure, you know, there's a lot more I've missed that we'll keep working on. But anything you'll click on that we've recommended, you'll know I think is quite credible. And I look over all the content that goes on that.
Absolutely. And I guess that's what I like I said, I really, really like about this, that, you know, for some of you listeners this evening, you know, you've gotten to know Dr. Unger. I've tried to bring him to his knees to let you see the personality, to let you know the man behind the information. So, you know, a lot of times you go on websites, you have no clue who's writing the website. At least you know who's writing this website. You know who's behind this website. So, I totally would like you to, you know, to get a chance to go on there, because we give you awareness, and we're bringing you this awareness tonight because this is a project, and it's for your benefit. You're not looking out to charge people or to take anything. It doesn't cost a dime.
Not at all.
But their attention. So it's free to go on there and get all this information. Podcast. You got every damn cast on there.
We're trying to, but listening to you and your daughter and what you're doing here, I think we're covering the exact same ground. You're bringing good information to the people. You're connecting to them. You're empowering them, and I got to give you credit for what you're doing, and having spoken with you, it's quite amazing, and you're going to do great with, you know, as you continue to do this too. I can't wait to see what you're going to do, and the energy the two of you bring in this room.
Okay, I think you want to hug, but you're not going to get it.
Have you assessed it?
What work, Dr. Unger?
I think he's assessing us right now.
This is called work.
This is the positive reinforcement part, and then...
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we have almost near the end of our show, and, you know, we want to really thank Dr. Unger, who at least came off, actually, from his vacation yesterday, and I just don't know how you do it. I mean, you know what animal you remind me of? I don't know if it's an animal. God,
an animal.
And take Jamila with you and keep her heavily sedated, okay? Put her in your trunk.
Like that Love Ramon song, I Want to Be Sedated, one of my favorites.
Right? No, do something to this girl, because the stress levels...
You see this?
not only do you see, but do you hear what she's asking to sedate her child. What parent does that?
Jamila, when you get in the studio, you're my co-host.
Who does that?
Stop. When you, no, get this very straight today, and I don't want to hear your voice, okay? When you come in the studio today, you know, no, it's,
threats,
it's there's no friendship.
Threats.
That's right. The typical power struggle between the mother and daughter. Here we go. Here,
ouch. We're being psychoanalyzed by Dr. Unger, but it was truly a pleasure in meeting you, and I really hope that people go on this website, www.mentalhealthminute.com. It's such a, you know, it's just so beautiful, mentalhealthminute.com. And like you said, it just gives you that, you get that little weather, and now you get that little mental health minute. There's tips.
Right.
Oh, I love it. I think, you know, people should really go on and I'm not just tooting your horn, okay?
Thank you.
If it wasn't good, I would not, if you know me well, and maybe you don't.
I don't think you'd hold back.
No, I wouldn't.
I don't know why.
You're right. You're very, very right.
Anybody who comes on the show, you know what? I do value my listeners, and I respect them, and I respect the community of Guelph, and I make it my mandate that anybody who comes on the show, you have to be passionate, you have to be honest, and you have to be a person of character. And I think you certainly passed that test, because I'm not here for false information. I'm not here to build anybody up. I'm here to really bring awareness. And you've assisted me greatly in bringing that this evening.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Before we, let's see if Jamila has
Look at the numbers. Just look at, no. There you go. As you know, the Talk Therapy Show is dedicated to lending a voice to your wounded emotions and physical challenges. Without your interest, there's little incentive to prepare for the show, so be sure to email us at talktherapyshow@gmail.com.
Tell you she's losing it.
Because of you. And send us your questions, comments, or show suggestions. Not going to be home and afraid you'll miss the show? No worries. You could also listen to our show on www.cfru.ca and listen to our past shows. A few events coming up.
Let me do this. Prisoner Justice Day programming that's going to be on August the 10th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And CFRU brings you in-house programming and materials from other community stations as we commemorate Prisoner Justice Day. Prisoner Justice Day, prisoners set aside as a day to fast and refuse to work in a short of solidarity with those people who exist outside prison system. So it's also a day when organizations and individuals in the community hold demonstrations, vigils, worship services, and other events in common resistance with prisoners. To learn more about Prisoner Justice Day or our plans for that day, contact our lovely, lovely Erin at 519-824-4120, extension 569-20.
And keep in mind that the Guelph Wellington Women in Crisis organization is always looking for volunteers. Remember, we need to help our fellow community members. So
our fellow women?
Right. So if you have some extra time on your hands, go on down. You know, meet some new friends and help a fellow person.
Okay. And last but not least. Okay.
CFRU presents a free course in community journalism.
Hold up, ladies and gentlemen. Don't say we're not nice to you here on CFRU, because we are bringing you a community journalism program.
Yes, starting this fall, independent media producers will be facilitating a course exploring issues in journalism. This course includes hands-on skill-building sessions, and it's open to people who are interested in all kinds of media.
Yeah, it's kind of like iReporting, you know? iReporting. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, because everybody has a story to tell, and you don't have to go to mainstream. So, hey, this is a great opportunity. You can always contact Erin again. Erin, if you are there listening, good night, my dear. You're in everything, and we love you. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Talk Therapy Show.
Are you forgetting something?
I know my pillow thought.
No.
My cuddly.
You see? No, you're really lost.
Talk Fest.
Last but not least,
Talk
good
Fest.
People. Talk Fest.
It's coming up, ladies and gentlemen. We will be in touch. We're looking for volunteers, and we will be in touch.
Email us, talktherapyshow@gmail.com.
That's right.
If you could talk more than I can, bring it on.
That's right. It's a festival about one love and respect and kindness for everybody. So we'll be in touch and let you know what's going on with that.
Now you could do your pillow thought.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. And now we've come to the end of our show, and we thank you for listening. And tonight's Pillar Thought has been brought to you by Brian Dyson, who was the CEO of Coca-Cola from 1959 to 1994, almost 35 years. And I'm going to bring this down low.
Oh, gosh.
She just hates me, but that's okay. I love you, Jay. Imagine life as a game in which you are juggling 5 balls in the air. You name them work, family, health, friends, and spirit. And you're keeping all of these in the air. You will soon understand that work is a rubber ball. If you drop it, it will bounce back. But the other balls, family, health, friends, and spirit, are made of glass. If you drop one of these, they will be irrevocably scuffed, marked, nicked, damaged, or even shattered. They will never be the same again. And I hasten to add, neither will you.